You've probably heard a lot about change in the last 12 or so months, a lot about resilience. You might find your well of resilience is getting tapped dry, quite honestly, and yet the world keeps turning. The school year continues, and we all need new reserves of resilience. And I think the best way to approach that is not simply with kind words of encouragement, but in conversation about what powering ahead really looks like in practice. At the 2021 TCA Convention and Exposition, presented alongside IdeaCon this year, we're covering education from every angle, including the perspectives we all need in hectic and uncertain times. Bonnie St. John knows a lot about resilience, a lot about overcoming obstacles. She's one of our featured focus keynote speakers this year. And if you're registered for the 2021 TCEA convention, and if you're not, you can still do it, you'll be able to hear her on Monday, February 1st at noon Central Time. But of course, we want you to know a little bit about her before she gives this keynote talk, a little bit about why she got selected to inspire our attendees. The first thing you might want to know is that her right leg was amputated at the age of 5. And despite that, Bonnie St. John became the first African-American ever to win medals in Winter Olympic competition. She took home a silver and 2 bronze medals. But in addition to that, she's a best-selling author and consultant, and her work focuses on quick, effective ways to build resilience and thrive in changing times. She's the author of 7 books, and the most recent is called Micro Resilience, Minor Shifts for Major Boosts in Focus, Drive, and Energy. And that sounds like something we could probably all use right about now. So to give you a preview of her talk, again, that'll be live February 1st and on demand after that for registered attendees. We sat down and had a conversation about resilience with Bonnie. So we're taking some time to talk with Bonnie and get inspired and get excited for her and all the other presenters, thought leaders, and people who are making this year's virtual convention happen. That's all coming up in this special convention preview meeting of the EdTech Club, and it all starts right now. Hey everybody, welcome back to another meeting of the EdTech Club. This week we're talking with one of our convention thought leaders, Bonnie St. John. So, here is our conversation. I guess the first thing to do is to simply have you introduce yourself, tell us who you are and what you do.
So, you know, Bonnie St. John, and it's a crazy story. My leg was amputated when I was 5 years old. I grew up in San Diego, California, and my mother was a school teacher and for most of her life, a single mom. And, you know, for me to become an international skier was a crazy story. The one-legged black girl from San Diego with no money goes, you know, skiing. And it was hard. You know, it's hard to ski with one leg. It's really hard to ski with no money. Okay. And so I had to be very resilient. I had to overcome a lot of obstacles. But I also grew up in a world of education. And so I'm so passionate and computers. So we can talk more about that, but I'm so passionate about this conference because it's the intersection of so many things I care about and I grew up with.
So there are some interesting aspects of your background there that I'm excited to dig into. But the first question has to be, how did you get into skiing? What? I mean, of course, you're well known for being an Olympic medalist. You took medals in the Paralympic Games and in skiing. How did that come about? I mean, you talk about growing up African-American woman in San Diego with one leg. Why did you decide skiing was right for you?
I know, isn't that crazy? And I'm actually the first African-American to win a Winter Olympic medal in Olympic or Paralympic medal in Winter Games. Mm-hmm. So it is a crazy story. A friend of mine in high school, Barbara Warmath, invited me to go skiing with her family over Christmas vacation. My birthday's in November, and she actually cut out a piece of notebook paper and gave me a coupon that said skiing with her family. And it was hard. I mean, first of all, I had to get, you know, clothes, and I wore knit mittens, which I got, you know, my hands froze, and I got a pair of ski pants from the Salvation Army. And, you know, it was hard even just to organize myself to go. But then when I went, I just fell and fell and fell. And, you know, she stayed with me on the bunny hill picking me up, and she could have skied anywhere on the mountain. And so I just think it's so amazing that she invited me and that I went. You know, I could have said, that's too hard, I can't go. And that she stuck with me. And the first 3 days was terrible because I couldn't snowplow. You know, I would just keep falling over. When I finally started moving, I couldn't stop, and I just ran into people.
Right.
So it's an interesting diversity story, though, when you think about it. We talk about the power of diversity. And because Barbara was willing to invite somebody different, you know, her one-legged friend from the wrong side of the tracks, I was actually bused into her school for diversity across town. Mm. And, you know, because she was making friends across differences and inviting me to go, it made the U.S. ski team more competitive. If I hadn't been there, the people behind me on the podium were not American. So America would have won fewer medals if Barbara hadn't been out, you know, reaching out across diversity.
And so, I mean, yeah, it's a simple thing of your friend Barbara saying, hey, we're going on a trip. Do you want to come with?
Yeah.
And it led, it kind of snowballed, if you will.
Great. Love it.
Into something bigger. I mean, it's a simple act, but what I wonder then is you said, okay, well, you know, my friend invited me to do something and I'll try it out. I've never been skiing. And you get out there and you realize that stopping in skiing usually for most people involves two legs.
So that was kids now call it the pizza or the wedge, right?
Right. And I took one ski class in my life, and that's all I remember. And I remember that being pretty difficult in the first place. I mean, so you get up there, you fall down over and over again. Why did you keep trying it?
Actually, you know, sorry, you just made me think too, is I do a lot of corporate speaking. So we talk about the power of diversity in corporations, but I wouldn't have met Barbara if it wasn't for the diversification of schools, right? School integration was why I met Barbara. Anyway, that's interesting.
Yeah. And so she invites you out there and you're falling all over the place. Why did you say, I'm going to keep skiing?
You know, that's an interesting question. It was so hard at first, but by the end of that week with Barbara, I actually had an advantage because when you snowplow, you're going slow and you're crossing your tips. Once I learned how to turn right and turn left, I was perfect parallel skiing. Mm. So I was going fast. I was on intermediate slopes by the end of the week, just, you know, getting through those first really hard days. After that, it got easier. But it was such a feeling of freedom. I couldn't run. I couldn't be on school teams for sports. There were so many things I couldn't do. But once I learned to ski and I found out there were other amputees skiing and racing, it was the first chance I had to be competitive in sports. So I saw the opportunity to do something that was exciting.
You know, it's funny to think about the breadcrumb trail of things, as you pointed to, you know, this simple act that your friend made of inviting you out. But then on top of that, there was another choice you made to keep trying something, to get over the hump of where it was really difficult until you could find the right, the right way of executing this task of skiing down a hill, if you will.
And because she invited me, I found the resources, I got the clothes, you know, and over time, I got equipment. Like I actually got a free ski from Rossignol because they would have people break a ski and return it. And they would give the broken other ski to amputees.
Oh, wow. I never even considered that. That makes
sense. Isn't that funny? Yeah. So I was able to get resources because I solved some of those problems with Barbara. Then I was able to continue skiing with other amputees.
And, you know, we see it grow and grow. I mean, you made a name for yourself as a Paralympian, as an athlete. But since then, I mean, you've done a ton of things. Folks can check out your bio, but I think there's even more to dig into. I mean, You've done corporate consulting work. You've done academic work. You've worked in the White House. I mean, tell us a little bit about how your career grew after the Olympics and the things that, you know, sort of led to the career you have now.
Well, as you say, people can read my bio, but what I think is interesting for TCEA and all of the people attending this year is what's not in the bio, which is a lot of things I'm so passionate about this subject of this conference. And I started programming when I was 12 in Fortran, and then later took courses in C++ and COBOL and BASIC and all kinds of languages nobody uses anymore. I'm a techie geek. And when I was in the White House, I worked on some of the educational technology committees and was very passionate about what was going on, you know, back then. I was in the Clinton White House, so that was a while ago. But I actually homeschooled my daughter for a number of years, so I had to be a teacher myself. My mother was an educator, so I grew up in a household talking. You know, we used to go decorate her classrooms when I was little. And then as she grew and became an administrator and a principal, you know, hearing about a lot of the issues in education and equity. And now I teach in the corporate world, and I teach virtually. I've been teaching virtual classes in the corporate world for 5 years now. And I'm just painfully aware of how difficult it is for LHI teachers that don't have corporate resources and, you know, have so many challenges. And in this year of 2020, oh my gosh. So I'm really excited about being able to give some inspiration and some practical tips for teachers, because, you know, I guess I'm saying they can read my bio, but what's not in my bio is all the intersections I have with technology and education in my life. And it's very real. Oh, my son-in-law now just graduated from college and started teaching in a high school classroom with a lot of Latinos who have English as a second language.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you're seeing all these different aspects of education throughout your life. You're also working really hard to make a number of personal achievements. I mean, the fact is your life story is fairly uncommon. And so, I mean, you have a unique perspective, but you're also sharing that with folks who might be working day in, day out and might feel like their personal stories aren't quite as unique or quite as uncommon or quite as eye-catching. However, they still have to, you know, they have to figure out how to ski with one leg sometimes, if you will. So what's the mindset that you learned through the challenges and the things you took on and the things you've achieved that you hope you can convey to anyone, regardless of who they are, where they come from, et cetera?
Well, I'm going to be talking about resiliency, and I've had to be resilient my whole life, obviously, to do the things I've done. But I wrote a book called Micro Resilience, and it's been translated around the world. I actually did a book tour in Japan, it's in Taiwan and all over the world. There's printing in India because resilience is so important right now, especially with the pandemic. But, you know, this book even came out before that. So resilience is really important to me, and giving people practical research-based tips on how to make our brains more resilient, how to make our energy and our emotions more resilient. There are science-based ways that we can do this. And what it means is being less exhausted. If we can bounce back faster and be less drained by everything that's thrown at us, it just helps us to live life more. What we saw with a lot of the people that we researched these evidence-based hacks and then gave them to people, tested them and watched the results. And what we saw is people said, it just helps me to be more me. You know, if I'm not exhausted and snapping at people and snapping at my family and, you know, not making decisions well, it's not like being a different person. It's just being your best self more of the time.
Mm. And I think about, you know, with education and technology, we talk a lot about like a toolkit or a toolbox of things you can use, strategies or apps or whatever it is. But I kind of have to think, you know, for a lot of folks, there's this problem of having a beautiful toolkit full of tools and not having the time to learn how to use all the tools.
Or the energy. A lot of, you know, there was somebody who said it's not about time management, it's about energy management. You know, you can have time, but if you're exhausted and your brain is flat, there, you know, you're not getting a lot out of that time. So being able to restore your mental, emotional, and physical energy more so is like having more time.
Right. And these are things I think, as we know, you know, 2021 might be another weird year. There's going to be some transitions. That's my guess. I'm not an expert.
I hope it's going to be better than 2020, but you're right. There's going to be a lot of need for resilience as we try to navigate our way out of this storm.
Right. And even, you know, moving into improving our conditions in various forms, you know, even that's going to be a transition for everyone. Now, I don't want you to give away the store here.
Well, I was just going to say, teachers have had it so tough to be in the classroom, out of the classroom, virtual, not virtual. And I know, like with my son-in-law, who has so many English as a second language students, when they went virtual, they lost almost half of their students and had to, you know, claw their way back to finding the students, figuring out how do we get them the technology. I know in some of the districts in Texas, they've been driving buses with Wi-Fi into different neighborhoods to try to give people better Wi-Fi so that kids aren't having to sit outside McDonald's, you know?
Right.
Right. I mean, people have been incredibly resilient. And so I know we're not going to teach resilience, but I can give people some understanding of hacks and just some basic principles. Again, science-based principles about how to be less exhausted by having to be resilient.
Yeah. And I mean, I have to imagine, you know, if you personally, you're training for an Olympic Games, or you're getting an advanced degree, or you're working in a high-pressure job, or you're consulting with major companies. How are you not exhausted? I mean, don't give away all your secrets, but a little hint maybe.
Yeah. You know, it's been interesting. The idea of driving yourself until you drop makes us feel, you know, I'm so tough. I can push myself really hard. And I've been like that all my life. I've had to be, right? But the idea of the research that we did on resilience, and so I coined the term micro resilience to look at tiny ways during the day to, again, help yourself to be more resilient. And it kind of goes against my nature. My instincts are just to drive myself until I fall over. And I know a lot of hardworking people, teachers, people in education, leaders, school board members, everything, you know, we tend to be like that. If you're passionate about what you're doing, you tend to do that. But what we saw in the research is using these tiny hacks along the way, you can restore your energy, your focus, your drive, and be less exhausted by what's thrown at you. So we coined the term macro resilience and micro resilience. So by macro, we mean big things that you have to do as a habit over and over again. So, you know, exercise on a regular basis, eat right, eat healthy, you know, do yoga or whatever you do, you know, those are all great things, but that's what we think of as macro. But these little tiny hacks that help you with your brain and your energy and everything help you immediately. So rather than having to do it as a habit over time, you do it immediately. Now, both things are good. We're not saying one is a substitute for the other, but a lot of people know you should get enough sleep and eat right, and they're doing the best they can. But these tiny hacks can make a big difference because they are things you don't know and things that you can add. Here's a tiny example. So the exercise, you know, you do it on a regular basis, you get fit, it's all good. But what I learned in doing this research is that as little as 15 or 20 minutes of exercise can make you smarter for hours afterwards. So that's different than working out just to be healthy and strong. If you think about that using your brain, if you have a challenging day, if you have a bunch of classes to teach, or you have a big presentation to give, or a meeting to lead, doing 15 or 20 minutes of even walking on a treadmill before that can help you to access your memory better, to make inferences better, to just show up mentally stronger. That's different than the exercise you do 3 times a week to be strong. And so leveraging insights like that can make a big difference in being less exhausted. So you're not trying to, build really big muscles, but just doing 15 minutes of walking before you have a lot of mental challenge can make that go better and easier. Does that make sense?
No, totally. And I could also see almost sort of, I hate to use the word distracting oneself, but almost sort of like giving yourself something to do so your maybe your mind relaxes a little bit. It can go back to its more elastic kind of state and allow it to just spring back if you give it that breather, right?
Yeah, and having looking at nature or getting a snack, there's a number of things you can do that reduce decision fatigue. So what happens is, we get even there's a couple of good studies out there on doctors and judges that get decision fatigue and start making poorer decisions. And they've documented, really smart people, well-trained for what they do, their decision-making ability goes downward. And we can restore that. And so for all of us, that means, if we could be making better decisions for ourselves, our families, our lives all day long, that's a good thing. And so understanding how do I restore my decision-making capacity when it's getting fatigued is another example. And so there's really good science out there that teaches simple hacks that can instantly restore you to a better place. And again, it just the overall impact that people have talked about from this work is it helps me to be more me, helps me to be the me I want to be, which has been hard in 2020. And so you started by asking, what do I do? And it was interesting when I started doing this research, again, I'm telling you, it went against my grain because my grain was just to push myself and suffer. But using some of these hacks makes it easier, makes it, less difficult to do the things you're going to do. And it's not about just throttling back and saying, hey, you've got to do an hour of meditation every day. If you can do that, great. But these little things just help you to be less exhausted. And so it has been for me too. And building it into my life over time has allowed me to continue going. I go at a pretty hard pace, but to be able to be more of the person I want to be with myself and my family.
Yeah. And I think, framing it between a macro resilience, a large scale resilience, and the small micro resilient decisions we can kind of make each day is helpful because as you say, a lot of people will sit down and see a mountain of work and say, okay, I'm going to get up on the top of the hill and I'm going to do it all day until it's done. I'm going to put on a pot of coffee or whatever it is and just go until I know I've accomplished my goal. The problem is you usually come out at the end of that in pretty rough shape. So these kind of micro behaviors or choices can help us achieve things while not running ourselves ragged, essentially.
Exactly. And if for people to have a practical takeaway just from this conversation, I did a TED talk on how to make a first aid kit for your attitude. And so people can listen to that and get an immediate takeaway if they want also.
I like that. I think there's a lot of people who might need a little first aid.
Aid kit for your attitude. I know. It really resonates. I've done that as I did it in an after school program for fourth graders, is help them build a first aid kit. So it's something you can use for yourself, in your classroom, with your kids. It's such a simple concept. People get it.
Excellent. Well, and I'm excited, we'll share at our convention, we'll be sharing, tools from the first aid kit, and we'll also be building some good long-term health practices as well, right?
Absolutely. And it's about research, which I know educators appreciate that there's evidence-based, information behind it, but also really practical hacks of here's how to operationalize it in really easy, quick ways during the day.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. Of course, we're looking forward to your keynote session. But I just want to say thanks for taking this time to share a little bit more of your personal insight and giving us a sense of what we can expect. I think I know I'm excited, and I think a lot of our attendees are going to be excited too.
Well, teachers are so critical, and I say that all educators, everybody involved in educating our children, and that's the future, and that's democracy. That's what helps us to live in a democracy. And I just think there is no more crucial subject right now, and trying to make it possible for everyone to get education in this country. I want to say teachers are heroes, but I mean that, and I am aware of all the challenges and the funding challenges and the technology challenges, and you know they're just up against so many obstacles. I'm thrilled to have the opportunity to get to put some wind beneath their wings.
Okay, we're out of time for this week's meeting. We hope you enjoyed the conversation, got a little bit of inspiration, and if you're thinking, wow, I want a little bit more of that, there's still time to register for the 2021 TCEA Convention and Exposition. The live event starts February 1st, but you'll have an entire month to explore more than 500 sessions on demand, plus digital social events, virtual networking, and of course, getting up close and personal as much as we can, with the newest technologies and the companies that produce them. And as I mentioned, we're doing this in partnership with IdeaCon this year. That just means more opportunities for learning, professional development, and engagement. So if you want to learn all the details of this unique virtual experience, go check it out at convention.tcea.org. And you know what? We'll count that as both homework and extra credit this week. That's right. I'm being especially generous. So go ahead and check that out at convention.tcea.org. And that's it. But stay tuned, because in the coming weeks, we'll be highlighting more of our thought leaders from the convention, giving you an inside look at their expertise and the messages that they're conveying to educators right now. So that's coming up in our future meetings of the EdTech Club, but this one is done for this week. The bell is ringing and I will let you go, but we will be back next week for another meeting and another convention preview. Until then, I'm Andrew Rausch. Thanks for being part of the club. EdTech Club is a production of TCEA. To learn more and to join, go to tcea.org.